Welcome to the Mauer Report. I'm your host, Jim Mauer. Before the Fast Hour and Paranormal Talk Radio starts, please go over to Facebook. Welcome to the Mauer Report. I'm your host, Jim Mauer. Before the Fast Hour and Paranormal Talk Radio starts, please go over to Facebook.com/iTalkParanormal and give it a like. And leave a message telling me what show you're listening to. I enjoy the fan feedback.
The opinions expressed in the Mallard Report are those of the hosts and participants and are not intended to and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of any simulcasting radio network or sponsor. All listeners are advised to make their own decisions.
It's the Mallard Report. Yeah, the Mallard Report. The Paranormal Talk Radio Show with Jim Mallard.
I want to welcome everybody to tonight's show. Tonight's sponsor is Kimberly Simon. Unleashing Your Shameless Woman is not another intellectual exercise or informational class, but exploring your inner terrain to light yourself. It all boils down to basically how what stuff you bottle up and how it impacts your life, and I've been part of the development of this program. It's a good program. So go over to KimberlySimon.com. Or just come over to italkparanormal.com and click the banner ads. All good stuff. The class runs 6 weeks starting here in a couple weeks, so get signed up today. My guest tonight, I see, this is what I failed to mention. I have a big question mark by it. My guest tonight is Bill, how do you say your last name, Bill?
Oberst, O-B-E-R-S-T, Jim. Bill Oberst, Jr.
I wanted to say that, but I was afraid that I'd probably slaughter it and you'd be like, no.
Always go to extremes. I get like... Hello, Bill. And I'm like, dude, it's Oberst, O-B-E-R-S-T. It's not the hard.
Well,
I want to ask you, who created that theme song that you've got? It's really great.
I have a guy on Fiverr.com who says, hey, I don't have to give him any credit or anything. I bought the song, and I can get you a link if you need some more music like that. But he's just a lot. At the end of the song, I have a different one. It's kind of, I sent him the message, I want an Irish drinking song theme. And it kind of is, kind of isn't, but it's cool. I like it. So, I've got another project for him, but I'm not sure if I want to
do... I love it. It's one of the best theme songs I've heard.
I don't know if I want to do, like, the Redneck Day... Or not the Redneck Days. The 12 Days of Paranormal Investigating for Christmas, or, like...
Ooh, that's good.
I don't know. I've got a few ideas floating around, but that might be the one I'm going with, because I've been jotting a lot of notes about it, so...
Mm-hmm.
So, how are you doing tonight, Bill? First, I want to thank you for your time. It seems like we were joking about how busy you are, but it's good to be busy, I'm telling you right now.
Thanks, man. I'm glad to be with you, and for your listeners who don't know who the hell I am, I'm an actor.
Well, I've been promoting you as the star of Abraham Lincoln vs. Zombies. Is that accurate? Is that the bill that I should be putting out there, or is there another role?
Well, I play Lincoln in it, yeah, absolutely. I guess the thing that people probably know me best for, beside Lincoln vs. Zombies, is Take This Lollipop, which was a Facebook application that won an Emmy last year. I think it's still the fastest-growing Facebook application of all time. It's had over 100 million hits. And a slew of independent horror movies, a couple of Hallmark movies. I've got about 102 IMDb credits, so I try to stay busy.
Well, wait. Horror movies and Hallmark movies. Let's touch the brakes right there. How does that... I mean, I know it's all in the skill, but that seems like a range of skills to have.
You know, you sound like Michael Landon Jr., who directed, Michael Landon's son, who directed these two Hallmark movies that I've been in, and there'll be a third one. And when he cast me for the first one, he said, I really like your stuff, but I got to sell you to the network. And I knew exactly what he was talking about, you know, because I have all these horror movies on my resume. But he was very, very cool, because people in the industry understand that, you know, actors have to work and you get branded as a certain way. And I really enjoy horror. I love it. But it's nice sometimes to do an occasional other thing. I played an Amish father in those Hallmark movies. And while I didn't kill anybody, I beat the hell out of a guitar, so I had at least that.
I can see the connection there. I see you. I've been seeing the picture of you as Lincoln. I can kind of make the transition there. Oh, I wanted to tell you before we get into this other stuff, no TMZ moment tonight. I don't think I want to end your career on the show, so. Unless you want to, I mean.
What do you mean?
Like that sound bite that, you know, is going to get blown off, like you call Obama a scumbag or, you know, something. I don't know. But just, you know.
I'm a very polite Southern boy. I don't think I'm capable of a TMZ moment. I was raised with people who would say, like, after somebody just went off and cursed like crazy, the people I was raised with would say, well, they weren't as nice as they possibly could have been, were they?
No, that's true. I just had to throw it out there.
Thank you.
Not that I wouldn't like the publicity, but I don't want to have it at your expense. So,
I'm going to tell you something, Jim, you may know this from talking to other people in the horror industry, but the people who do these heinous things on screen, like last night I branded a witch. My voice is a little groggy because I was up all night branding this chick, and it's like the third chick that I've branded in 2 years. I just spent 5 weeks in Texas playing a necrophiliac clown. I mean, I do awful, awful things on screen, but all of us guys and girls who do these awful things, we're usually pretty sweet, nice people, I think, because we get it all out on screen.
I was going to say, I think because you get to act it out on a regular basis, and then you can calm down and be normal. As normal as some people can be.
Once you rape and pillage and rip a guy's face off while he's still alive, then normal violence just seems boring, silly, and unnecessary because you've already, I don't know, you know, it's like it's very cathartic to do these things, and then you're very chill afterwards.
Makes sense to me, but what do I know?
That's what I always say. What the hell do I know? I'm just an actor. That's my motto.
Well, I read that you've been behind the camera a few times. Is that what you want to do, or do you want to keep acting?
No, I think every actor has delusions of being able to do everything as part of the actor sickness and neuroses that we all have. I have not ventured to think, hey, I'm a director. I haven't done that stuff yet, but I have helped to produce a couple of things. Making a movie is so hard, and especially in an indie level, that it's good to be able to not just sit in your trailer and say, I'll be here when you need me. But, you know, like last night, I was helping move furniture around and helping rig lights, and it's good to be able to do everything.
I understand that, because doing this radio show has taught me how to produce my own show and promote my own show and all that good stuff, so I understand that completely.
I think it's really good. I mean, I've spent 14 years in theater before I did this, and 14 years in touring theater. So I'm used to loading in and loading out to theaters in the middle of the night and doing makeup in cold bathrooms and sometimes cleaning the bathroom because it wasn't clean enough, so I'd bring my own Comet and stuff. So, you know, it makes you humble because you realize, you know, life is too short to be a bitch.
That's true. You heard it here first. No. So, I've got a couple. You sent me a couple projects that you want to talk about, of course. So that's fine. That's good. I like talking about what you've just. Well, these are what, post production or nearing post production, like The Word of Bateman. That's probably close to being done. I don't have that right in front of me. I should have wrote more notes down than the title of it. But
yes, there's a project called Lord Bateman, and Lord Bateman is a demon film. I haven't done a demon film. And I'm working with director Joe Hendrick on it, and we're hoping to film it in Europe next year. The concept of this thing, I believe in dreams and in messages coming through dreams. I'm a Christian, and that's part of the background of the faith. But also, just in general, I believe that dreams are more than just disconnected thoughts trying to organize themselves. And so I started having this dream, Jim, like last year, and I dreamed it repeatedly. Seeing myself as this red-skinned classic demon, like, you know, the devil with the tail. And it just wouldn't go away. It just wanted to get out. And so I got on Craigslist. I found a photographer and a couple models and a makeup artist. And I said, let's do this shoot of this guy who's like a half-human, half-demon, and he's terrorizing these girls. And we did the shoot and put the pictures up. And I was like, okay, I got that out of my system. And then I did a film with Joe Hendrick. And we're on the set, and I'm telling him about this, showing him some of these pictures. He says, we've got to turn this into a movie. So it snowballed, and now it's the story of a European nobleman who keeps having these dreams, and he becomes increasingly convinced that he really is a demon and that his whole life on Earth is an illusion and that he's slowly reverting back to the demon. And so that's what that project is all about. If people want to look at some pictures, they can Google Lord Bateman, B-A-T-E-M-A-N. And they can see, you know, some of the early concept photos and some of the stuff from we're getting together for the movie. We're gathering investors now.
Truthfully, I'm not normally a movie person, but some of these things that you've been talking about, like I've seen the Lincoln vs. Zombie movie, so I might be a fan of yours, even though I'm not a real movie fan. So we're going to have to keep this in mind.
Well, thank you, man. I love my work, and I like movies that make you think. That's what I'm a fan of the most of all. My favorite horror movie of all is The Exorcist. because it was a little bit ambiguous. It's good versus evil, but both are very, very strong. You're not sure at the end who has won and whether it's a victory at all, and I love that kind of stuff.
That's what I tell people about my songs. I rather have them speak to me or for me instead of just being a good song. So movies,
yeah,
it's a little bit tougher of a movie, though, but it's good to hear that there's some passion going into that. So the next thing I wanted to make sure we got out was the Circus of the Dead. Now, that just seems like a fun title.
Is it a fun title? It's a horrid movie, and I don't mean a bad movie. I mean a movie dealing with hard subject matter. I played a necrophiliac clown. I spent 5 weeks in Texas doing this. They spent a lot of money on it, and they really got it right. They did some of the classic clown makeup from the turn of the century, like the Victorian-type clowns, which are even scarier than the Bozo clowns. So we got a group of clowns, and the way the director explained it to me, he said, Bill, they're serial killers, but their day job happens to be as circus clowns. So director Billy Pond got us all on set in Odessa, Texas, dressed us as clowns, and had us do the most brutal acts of violence I have ever committed on screen or ever seen in a script. I mean, this is balls to the wall violence, Jim. It's just like these clowns mean no good. So it's not going to be a movie for kids. It's pretty hardcore. And the worldview of this director is bad things happen. You know, there's different ways to approach bad things, like bad things happen for a reason, bad things happen, but you can avoid them. But his is just bad things happen. And so the motto for the movie is, the circus is coming, hide.
Yeah, I would imagine if the bad things were happening in town. I mean, most people don't like clowns to begin with.
I don't know why that is. I have no aversion or fear of clowns at all, but I know that many people do. It's called calorophobia. I did not know until I did this film that there's a corresponding condition called calorophilia, which is the erotic attraction to clowns. But as soon as I started posting these pictures of the clowns from the movie, I started getting these mails from these girls who were into clowns. Go figure. Let me just tell you, Jim, there's something for everybody.
I was going to say, I had no idea, but now that you mention it, it kind of surprises me, but it's kind of like, yeah, I can kind of see that.
Uh-huh. Nothing surprises on the Internet. That movie will be out in May, and that plus Children of Sorrow will be my two big theatrical releases for next spring. I'm excited about both of them.
Well, that's the next thing on my notes, Children of Sorrow. So it's since you're doing such a good job of being a segue artist here, let's just segue right into that.
I'm an old DJ, man. That's what I do, mix the songs together. Children of Sorrow is a movie about cult leaders in a desert. It's a really disturbing film. It's very, very low-key. The director, Jordan McClure, he wanted to do a horror film without the gore. And so he said, let's see if we can make people's skin crawl and make them very, very uncomfortable without buckets of gore. And I think he did it. We won awards at two film festivals, including Shockfest in Hollywood, won the top award there in Best Actor. And then After Dark Films picked it up. They're the company that's famous for the 8 films to die for. And After Dark is releasing it in the spring. And they think it's going to be a big movie. And I hope that it is, too. It's the people who have seen it have said, I'm not sure that I'm glad I saw that, but now it can never be unseen. Variations of that comment came up again and again. And I really, really like that, you know, the fact that they're like, this is going to be stuck in my head now. That's what a movie should do.
Yeah, it should leave a mark. I mean, I don't want to say mark, but it should leave an impression. There's a better word. On your mind and leave a lasting impact, good, bad,
I like Mark. I like Mark. Casablanca left a mark on me. I'm Going with the Wind left a mark on me. Amadeus left a mark on me. These are big themes that are stuck in my mind and that helped illuminate the story of my own life. They meant something to me. I think that's what cinema's for. Man, I do not believe, I work with a lot of directors and I disagree with them, who believe that cinema is supposed to be a strict representation of reality. I don't believe that. I think cinema is a time to play. You're painting pictures with light. Why stick to real life? I live real life, and it's pretty boring. So do you.
Yeah, I was going to say, why would we want to see real life? I mean, hello, I see it 24/7. I don't need to see it every day. That's why it baffles me about reality TV being so popular. I don't get it. I mean, it's a different reality, but
I don't either. And it's not real, of course. It's as fake as the rest. But I don't understand why there's this interest in making things real. I don't want things to be real. This is a business of illusion and fantasy. When I listen to if I listen to Black Dog by Led Zeppelin, I don't want it to have anything to do with my daily life. I want that riff to take me away.
Yeah, your song about real life would be, well, you live in California, so you just know this more than me. Stuck in traffic for the next 2 hours.
That's not a good song, and I don't want to hear it. Because I've been there. Who has it? Nobody wants to hear that.
Yeah, nobody wants to hear
me
sing either.
Away. Well, I do. I kind of like it. What I figure is, look, I'm going to a movie. You're the director. You're driving. Take me somewhere. I don't really care where we go. Don't be concerned that, oh, they won't know where we're going or they won't understand. Just take me somewhere. I'm in the car. I came to the theater. You're driving. Have the guts to take me somewhere. Sorry, I get passionate.
That's fine. That's good. I like passionate. I'm passionate about some things, so that's good. But like The Sixth Sense, I kind of had to watch it 2 or 3 times to pick all the little details and nuances up. It's good to make somebody watch a movie and have to think about it and go, I like that, but I don't understand it, so let me watch it again.
You know, a movie that really resonated with me when I was a kid was Amadeus, because it was about these great themes of genius and where it comes from and who gets genius and why. And my whole life I've been thinking about that movie ever since I saw it. I don't think there's been a week that I didn't think about these great themes of this great, poignant tragedy of a man who wants so badly, Jim, he wants so badly to be a genius. And he begs God for the gift. And God doesn't give it to him. God gives it instead to this farting, irreverent little prick, Mozart. He gets the gift. And there's this beautiful moment where Salieri looks, he's holding the crucifix in his hand, and he looks in the fire, and he looks down at the cross, and he says, Grazie, Signore, grazie. And he throws it in the fire. He's like, you know, I'm done with you. You don't give me my gift, I'm done with you. And that speaks so much about human nature. This is just one film, but I love these films that get an idea across. The Children of Sorrow is about trust, because it's about a cult, and it's about who to trust and when. And I think that's a good theme to think about and groove on.
It is. You've got to develop relationships, but it's so hard to trust people at times because you know at the end of the day they have their own agenda about what they're doing. I'm sure you're familiar with that principle of being an actor, you know. Somebody walks up to you, gets good old buddy-buddy with you, you know they want something.
I don't trust it, man. My dad taught me not to trust anybody who glad hands you or calls you buddy.
It's true.
Hey, Jim, buddy, how you doing? I'm like, beep, 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 beep. But the guys who come up, the ones who can rip me off and con me and have, are the ones who come up with like, hey, man, how you doing, you know? And you're like, hey, well, you know, what's going on with you? Ah, you know, nothing. It just makes you more curious, and then you want to dig more.
Right. I know that feeling. Been there, done that. That's okay, though. We're not going to delve into the negative ends of things. So I want to ask you, what's your advice for, like, a young actor or actress that, like, has the idea in their mind, finally, and that's what they want to be? So where would we... What would you tell them?
I'd tell them to really, really think about what makes you happy, and is this the gift that God has given you, if you believe in a God? Do you think this is what you're meant to do with your life? And the way you can know is set your alarm for 3 a.m. and wake up and ask yourself the question, because then all your defenses are down, you know? And you'll know. If this is what you're meant to do, by all means, go and do it. But if you just think that you're going to get rich or famous, please, God, run the other way. Don't come anywhere near this profession, because you won't get rich and you won't get famous. The odds are completely against you. You have to love it, or there's no point in doing it. So make sure that it's your passion to the exclusion of all other passions professionally. And if it is your passion, then do it, but be sure.
Solid advice.
And act. And act. Like write, you know, like what does a writer do? A writer writes. How do you write? You get up every morning and you write. Even if you don't have anything, you write. Same thing with acting. If it's a young person and they think they want to be an actor, don't read about it. Don't think about it. Don't moon about it. Don't talk about it. Do it. Start acting. Act.
Well, you just told me a little bit ago you spent 13 years on the road doing this before you even got anywhere close to being where you're at now. So it's a process. It's not like you show up day one and they say, here's your new sitcom or your feature film.
Oh, absolutely not. And I made a good living in theater. I enjoyed theater, but I'd never done film at all. And when I did start getting involved in film by accident, it ended up being really good training for it, having done all of those shows, it gives you confidence. So, yeah, it's a lifelong thing. So if a kid wants to be an actor, don't think, oh, I'll give it 5 years. You have to give it a lifetime, like any other profession you really love, like a musician, right?
Right, exactly. We all can't be Justin Bieber, thank God.
Yeah, man, I mean, you know, John Fogerty's still out there cranking it out, and John Mellencamp, and, you know, shit. I mean, all these guys, it's a lifetime thing. Sometime you're famous, sometime you're not, but you do it because you love it.
I went and seen the Eagles in July.
Were they good?
Awesome. Amazing. They sounded just like they did on the CD. But then again, that was how they recorded back in the day. They recorded live. There wasn't all the overdubs. Yeah. And So who's your music? Who are you going to go see if you would go see somebody, since we're on the subject?
You know, that's a really hard question. To pay to see would be tough because I've got so much music and I love so much music. To actually see... I'd probably see McCartney just to say that I had seen him. Yeah, definitely. I saw James Brown when he was alive, when he was given sort of his last concerts, and I was really, really glad I got the opportunity to see him. The people that I like to see are like the legends. I see the Stones. Yeah, people like that. They're really big ones.
So that pushes me to my next question. Kind of. You know, I know there's probably a politically correct answer you're going to give me here, but I'm going to ask the question anyways, so... if there's like one person or a couple people even that you would like to work with that you haven't had the opportunity to work with yet on a film, I guess I should preference it that way too.
William Devane, Willem Dafoe, Christopher Walken, De Niro, you know, all these people who are known for giving great intense performances. Sometimes you get lucky enough to get compared to them. Somebody said if Harvey Keitel and Willem Dafoe had a bastard love child, it would be Oberst. Somebody wrote that once. So those kind of people, the kind of people who are kind of sort of in my class, who I can learn from. I got to do a film with a guy named Robert Loggia. You know who Loggia is? He was in Big with Tom Hanks. He played the boss. You know, the one who danced on the piano keys?
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
Okay.
Took me a minute. Like I said, I don't watch that many movies, so it's all running together there. I was thinking Forrest Gump for some reason.
Logie has done a slew of bad guys. He's a very, very famous badass actor. Anyway, I got to work with him, and just being able to be on the same set with him was an education, just watching him and his relationship to the camera. The camera is, it's like a lover. It's the closest thing. And watching how different people approach her and touch her and stroke her and try to get her to respond to them, it's amazing to watch. You don't just walk in front of a camera and say, hey, look at me, because the camera's a really fickle lover. You got to touch it in just the right way. So I love to watch these very, very, very experienced actors do it.
That makes sense to me, because it would be hard just to, okay, back it up. Personal story time. Everybody turn the radio off for 30 seconds while I tell it. I used to do, when the show first started, I tried doing video, and I couldn't do it, because I couldn't look at the camera and please everybody while I'm sitting here doing this interview, talking, jotting more notes as I'm, you know, questions come up that I want to ask again later, or, you know, or read a chat room, or read tweets, or just, you know, it's just, there's so many different little angles, but I couldn't just take myself and just sit there and smile while the guest was talking, and then just instantly just start asking another question. So people were like, kept asking me, why don't you look in the camera? I'm like, you're watching me do a radio show first and foremost. I mean, there's other things going on besides I'm not Bill O'Reilly sitting here hosting this show, and that's all I have to do. Mm-hmm. I'll have a producer in my ear saying, ask him about what it's like to live in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that's insane, but
yeah, you're absolutely right. Being on camera is a... It's a skill. It's a skill I didn't know until I started 5 years ago. I knew stage intimately. I knew it so well. You could feel every pulse from doing thousands and thousands of shows. And camera is so different because the audience isn't there. And it took me a while. I was like playing to the invisible audience. And it took me a while to realize that it's just me and the camera. There's nobody else there. The fat guy in flip-flops holding up the cords, he's not there. And sometime your other actor is there with you. Sometime they're really not. They're not present at all, you know, just physically there. But it's about you and the camera, you and your relationship with the camera and the light. That's the cool thing about being on camera, is how being in the light can change everything. You look at these old movies, you know, the movies of the 40s and 30s, and how they lit the characters, the film noir stuff.
Yeah.
Lighting is everything. So I like to stay on set while they're lighting so I can understand the light in the scene and know how to move in the light. And sometime, like occasionally, you know, I'll learn something and be able to move in the light the right way, and it gives a really nice effect. Because that's all camera is. You're just painting with light in a frame.
So it is fascinating what they used to, what they used to do with even like dialogue and just the angles and stuff. It seems to be a lost art, the art of making a film.
I think it is. Now they just, I shouldn't say they. Now a lot of people buy a camera, point it, and shoot it, and think that people will want to watch it.
And it's not always the case. I mean, there's got to be more to it than that.
It's like a date night with your wife, man. I mean, you got to put some effort into it. You can't just say like, hey, you know, we're having beanie weenies, let's get to it. It's the same thing with you have to romance your audience. And a lot of directors don't do it anymore.
And is that just because of lack of knowledge or the lack of desire to, or just trying to crank out the next one?
Cranking them out, because everything now is just about, you know, theaters are just about gone. Spielberg believes that in 10 years there won't be any movie theaters anymore. I don't know about that, but most films, and certainly most films that I make, they're never going to play in a theater, ever. The new delivery platforms and the internet and through streaming and the home theaters. And so there's this mad scramble to get product out there, and things get done really quickly.
But I think there's still going to be a demand for quality stuff. Even if it isn't in the theater, I think somebody will still pay to see a well-produced, well-delivered movie, though, right? I'm right.
Well, there is for me. I mean, I won't go see a movie unless I think it's going to surprise me. If it's just, okay, it's the blockbuster of the summer, and we know what it's going to be, I don't really have any interest in seeing it, Jim. You know, I want something to surprise me, take me somewhere.
So
I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe I'm the rarity. Maybe people are just like, oh, I want to see a movie about this, and I want it to be exactly what I expect it to be. And I'll be pissed if it's not exactly what I expect.
Then why
I
see
hope
it?
Not.
Then why see
That's
it?
That's what I'm thinking. Why see it? It's like if you have a kid and you're like, I know exactly how this kid's going to grow up and what his life will be. Why raise him? Where's the mystery and the romance and the love of life then? I don't know.
I hope I know what my kid's going to be when he grows up, but I don't know what he's like. I don't think he's going to be an actor, but I think I want him to be a solid young individual when I turn him over to the world. I don't care if he's an actor or a doctor or probably not an astronaut. With the government shutdown, we got to stay away from those kind of jobs. But
and thank God that you don't know is what I mean. Like we don't, you know that Garth Brooks song, The Dance?
Yeah.
I'm glad I didn't know.
I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up.
It's the same way, and I think that's fine, and it's wonderful, and it's good, but I wish that more directors, and particularly people who invest in films, would trust audiences with a little ambiguity, trust us to be okay with not always getting exactly what we expect, surprise us.
Yeah, I think that's key to anything. I think the element of shock, surprise, I don't think it's ever hurt anybody, but
that's the kind of films I aspire to do. God knows it's not the kind of films I always do. You know, because I'm an actor and I got to work, and I've done 13 films this year and I'll do 14 next year. But, you know, that's what you aspire to. That's the gold standard.
So you just mentioned you do 13 and 14 films a year. How does that process? I mean, I know there's a whole back end process, but how does that work for you? Like, do they tell you days, weeks, months in advance when you're going to be doing this, or how does that work? For a novelist
like
me who's outside the business.
Yeah, on a big, 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 big studio film, you know, many months in advance of smaller films, they'll attach you as the first step. They'll say, hey, Jim, would you be interested in attaching yourself to this role? So what that means is that usually they pay a fee, or they may not if you don't want them to charge them, but they use your name to raise money. And so they can use your name for a year to raise money. And then when the money's raised, then they go into pre-production phase, and that means they're gathering all of their information together and trying to get a production schedule, and then the last step is saying, okay, now we're actually ready to go into production. You usually get that information 2 months, maybe 3 months beforehand, but it can change. They can do what they call push, which is like you can be a week away from starting a project and you blocked off all the dates from your calendar, and then they say we're pushing, which means we're moving forward a week or 2 weeks because we're not quite ready. So what you have to do, I've learned, is to have a clause in your contract that says if it gets to be within 30 days of the shoot and you push, then, you know, there has to be some compensation for that. Otherwise, you're just holding off huge blocks of time, and then they're saying, oh, sorry, we're not making the movie, which has happened.
Yeah.
While you're working on one project, you're getting ready for the next one, too. That's a little mind trip. Because you got to be totally present where you are in the movie you're making, but also be thinking about the movie you're getting ready to make, and you can't get the two mixed up in your mind, but you have to be ready for the next one.
As I say, you mentioned earlier being an Amish farmer, and then you tell me about being this this horrible clown, and I'm just trying to imagine how much mindset change it has to be. And you obviously don't walk from one to the next, but even it's got to take a course of time to get your mind right around that. I just can't imagine just trying to flip a switch and doing it.
It helps to be a little bit crazy. All actors have got to be a little bit messed up, I think, and musicians too. I think musicians are all messed up too. You got to be able to say, okay, now I'm doing this and nothing but this, and everything else goes away. Which is why our family lives are usually so bad. Entertainers, performers, musicians, all sorts of creative people, because your wife, your husband, whatever, is like, why are you not present? Why are you not with me? I'm doing my stuff. I'm working on my music. I'm learning my lines. I'm doing this. So even when you're with somebody, you're not always present. You got to force yourself to shut it down. And I know that in my business, that's why a lot of marriages go bad, because it's an all-consuming business.
It is. Really, I can imagine it would be, because you have to be so learning lines and writing a character and all that stuff.
I talked to a writer last night, and he said, I'm really, really, really having problems with my girlfriend, because he's trying to write a script, and he works at home, and she's at home. And she says, even when I'm with you, you're not here. And she's absolutely right. He's only there in body. His mind is in this world he's created.
Yeah, and it'd be hard. There's no differential then. Because, like, when you're on the set, you're on the set. And then you can go home, and that wall is different, and you can evolve around that. But if you're working from home, I can't imagine trying to break, because there's no barrier to break, so to speak. So it would be tough to be a writer or somebody out there trying to deliver that different world. I mean, delivering it from your point would be tough, but being the guy that puts the pen to create all the lighting and the scenes, I love writers, I love actors, I love musicians. It's just that creative juice they all have that makes me wonder why I just talk for an hour every week.
I wonder why we do it sometime. I wonder, like at 3 a.m. last night when I'm, branding this witch, everybody's tired, everybody's dog tired, really exhausted, but everybody's really happy, and I'm thinking, are we crazy? Are we insane? Why are we doing this? You have those thoughts. But we're doing it because we love it, and passion covers a multitude of sins, I guess.
Well, it's sure helpful, because if you didn't love it, you wouldn't be doing it. So makes things easier when you enjoy doing it.
I want to ask you.
Go ahead.
Because your show deals with the paranormal. And it's maybe an obvious question, but I haven't talked to you before, and I'd like to know, do you believe in ghosts? And if so, what do you think they are? And I ask this because my hometown is known as one of the most haunted places in America, and Georgetown, South Carolina. So I grew up with this stuff, but I'd like to know what your take is on it.
I do believe in ghosts, but I'm not exactly sure what they are. I'm not even sure. I just don't know. I think there's some interdimension connection. I'm not sure if they're even human spirits at this point. I want to believe they are human spirits, but on the other hand, I'm just not quite sure. At one point, I would have told you, yes, they're all human spirits. But then, the more I realized that we're not alone in the galaxy, there's some more intelligent things than us somewhere out there. So are they messing with us? Mm-hmm. Or are we messing with ourselves just trying to believe in the grandma's around? Does that answer your question or not at all? I don't know. Probably doesn't. Probably makes you want to ask more questions, which is fine.
That's just the best kind of answer. What do you mean when you say you think we're messing with ourselves?
Well, I you know how sometimes when a loved one passes and you want to believe they're still around you?
Yes.
So that connection, you don't want to let go of them?
Yes.
So we take any little small coincidence possibly that, hey, they're still here, they're still loving us.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. On some hand, I think that's just, you know, like the whole, and of course it all comes back to the religion and that whole belief system, and there's so many different layers once you start peeling the onion, so to speak. It just, I don't know. The more I think about it, the more I go, oh, I'm going to make my head explode someday.
I know that the fear of, well, I mean, what Shakespeare said, the fear of something that comes after death, the undiscovered boon from whose, you know, the undiscovered country from whose boon no traveler returns, makes us bear the ills we have than rather than flee to those we know not of. Conscience makes cowards of us all. It's universal and it's timeless, this fear of what comes next. You think that we're able to actually, our anxiety can create manifestations, physical manifestations?
It's possible. I mean, there are conditions that people, you know, black out and not remember things for a period of time, like people sleepwalk and stuff, so it's possible to have altered states. So, that's why I like doing this, because I get little fragments from people, and it kind of adds to my puzzle. Of course, I don't have the picture yet.
That's good. We should probably never have the picture. We wouldn't know what to do with it.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. Even if we had the picture, what would we do with it? We'd be like, that's not right.
We'd try to package it and make money off of it, and then it would suck.
Yeah. And then you'd make the film about it.
We'd make a bad film about it, and I'd be in it. I know that sleep deprivation, that when you reach the final stages of sleep deprivation, I read, you know, Michael Jackson didn't have any REM sleep. They said he's the person who went the longest without REM sleep before he died. Because that propofol that he was taking, it makes you feel rested, but you've never entered deep sleep. And when you enter those last stages of being sleep deprived, you start to see things and have hallucinations, which he did. He said that he was seeing things and people, and that people were talking to him and they weren't even in the room. And so I wonder if it's possible. We know that humans can do that under extreme anxiety. What else can we, I mean, what do you think about, like, astral projection and, you know, being able to have such intense energy that we can make an object move? What do you think any of that is ever possible?
I think there's got to be some level, because there's an unconscious communication that people, you know, telepathy, people transferring messages back and forth. And, the twins knowing what's going on with the other one, even though they're not in the room. So there's some, you know, there's something. But, boy, it's just so, there's so many little things that just don't make sense. But then you start questioning them, and you open that can of worms, so to speak, and you start digging, and it's just... So
what about right now? Is there some energy being exchanged between us, or are these just words?
I think there's energy that goes into everything. Like, every time you put a film out, there's an energy that you put into it and it comes out of you. So,
there's a story in the New Testament where Jesus is surrounded by all of these people, and like literally, it's called In the Press, but he's in the press, and they're pressing against him, and going against the road, and this one lone woman comes up, and she reaches down and she touches the bottom of his robe, and he stops and he says, "Who touched me?" And I said, "What are you talking about? You know, you're in the press. There's hundreds of people around you." And he says, "No, someone touched me. I felt virtue leave me." And that's the King James. And then the other, when you get down to the original translation, it's something like energy. I felt power leave me, but that's, even power is not really it. It's closer to energy, what they would have understood in their language. I felt something vital leave me because this person touched me. And that's always fascinated me, that there could be an exchange of energy between people.
Well, there are people that do Reiki healing, where they transfer energy from them to you, and it makes things feel. I mean, I've had somebody do it on my shoulder, and I was, you know, very skeptical of this whole process.
Uh-huh.
They weren't even in the same state, but I was talking to there was an intermediate between me and this person because they couldn't do it while they were on the phone. So I said, okay. And sure enough, my shoulder loosened up and felt better. Now, is that coincidence, or is that energy being transferred person to person?
Wow. This is very, very interesting. Carl Sagan wrote a book called The Demon-Haunted World, and Sagan believed that everything that we believe is supernatural was a coincidence. I have great respect for Sagan, although I just agree with him on that point, but it was fascinating. He talked about this, about we think, oh, that couldn't happen. There couldn't be this coincidence that Jim, somebody was saying they were going to help Jim's shoulder, and then Jim's shoulder felt good. There's no way that could happen. But Sagan says there is that way that could happen, because the universe is either finite or infinite. And if the universe is finite, it has an edge. And if it's infinite, then it goes on forever and ever, and all things happen within an infinite universe. All possibilities must exist within the infinite universe. That blew my mind when I was 16, Jim.
It still blows my mind today. You know, I had a guest tell me. I have a guest tell me one time, you got to remember, at one time, not too long ago, the world was flat.
World was what?
The world was flat.
What does that mean?
The people thought you could sail off the edge of the Earth.
Okay, they thought so it was, yes.
Yeah, so now we've realized the Earth is round. You know, this was only a couple hundred years ago people were thinking this way.
Yes.
So just imagine, progress another couple hundred years, what they'll be laughing at that we thought.
You know, we love to laugh at previous generations, don't we?
Yeah.
Those people with their stupid hair and their stupid beliefs, they're going to be us.
That's right.
Let's not say forever, but if you could live 500 years, would you?
That's a scary question because having a family and all, you kind of know you'd be alone at some point, even though that you'd have generations around you that may respect you. But you know what I'm saying? To be alone? Mm-hmm. I don't think so. I think I would rather just live out my course and go off into the proverbial sunset, wherever it may be.
That's pretty stunning that you'd say that, because that's the great human desire, is for immortality, and you're just saying no.
Well, there you have it. Shocking news here. No, I don't desire, you know, what's the gain? Okay, so I see the iPhone 500. Whatever it'll be at that point.
Yeah, what do we think we're going to gain by living forever? I mean, we don't want to die, but what do we think we're going to gain? Because once you've lived long enough, you've experienced variations of most things.
Yeah.
Which is why really old people, they get to the point of I don't want any new things.
Well, I mean, there's that physical condition aspect you have to take into account, too. If body progresses at the same rate it's progressing now, when I'm 500, I'll be like in a bed all the time.
Yeah.
So if it's not living, what's the point of living?
That's the vampire myth. That's the great lure of the vampire myth. The vampire gets to live forever, but so there's always a but. He's cursed. He's damned, and his life is miserable. But he gets to live forever.
And it's not like if you could live forever, you're going to become this Oscar-winning machine.
And if you did become an Oscar-winning machine, wouldn't it get old after 300 years?
Yes. Well, funny you mention that, because I had Jim DeFelice on, New York Times bestseller, and he says, it was nice. I enjoyed the first one for about a day and a half, but that project was so far removed from when he put the pen to the paper. He didn't do that, but he said it didn't really matter, because he had this book that was on a deadline. He couldn't, enjoy it. And he said, now that's happened a few times. Yeah, I stop and enjoy it for a little bit, but there's always the next deadline. And I was dumbfounded when he said it. I'm like, dude, you know how many people would give their left arm for that right now?
So it reminds me of Katharine Hepburn using her Oscar for a doorstep. Yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, I guess ultimately they are just things. And even though we live a long time and we get everything we want, we humans are just never satisfied, are we?
I don't think so.
I mean, I know for myself that, okay, I wanted to be an actor. All right, I became an actor. I want to make a living as an actor. I became making a living as an actor. I wanted to be a well-known stage actor, and I became a somewhat well-known touring stage actor. Then I wanted to get into film, and it's like, okay, I really want to get to be a working actor in film, so I became a working actor in film. I want to do a lot of movies. Okay, now I've done 100. But it's always the goalposts always get moved, right?
Yeah. That's what somebody told me, because I have this big grand mission statement that I want to get 1,000 downloads or 1,000,000 downloads in a year. Sounds great. Mm-hmm. And they said, you know, the next morning when you wake up, you're going to want 2,000,000 the next year. Doesn't matter.
Wow.
And it's like,
so then what should we do?
Enjoy it while we can. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know how else to put it, but we just smile and take everything and be happy with it. Because it is
what
we want.
Line. It's that great line from the movie Year of Living Dangerously that Linda Hunt had. What then must we do? What do we do? So we just try to enjoy our life? But, Jim, everything in our culture tells us not to do that. It tells us that we have to achieve and acquire in order to enjoy our life.
Okay. So what would you acquire that would make you more happy than you are today?
Hell if I know.
$1 million house?
No.
Maserati?
No. Who cleaned the windows?
You don't need just have open air, then you don't have that problem.
It's too much. I'm happy at this moment because I'm talking to you, grooving on the conversation and talking about doing what I love. But this doesn't involve any accolades or any awards. I'm just sitting here in my pajamas talking to you. But it makes me happy. Curious.
It is. But that's, I think, you mentioned the culture, and I think that's where I hear about enlightenment, like people wanting us to move to a higher enlightenment level. And I think it's true. We need to grow up, so to speak, and realize that, yeah, we got it. It may not be perfect.
It may not be perfect, but
it's better than it could be.
If we were enlightened, we wouldn't buy fruit roll-ups.
Oh, we would buy a lot of things if we knew what was going on.
Other things. Well, like so there's the clash between our spiritual yearning and capitalism. I love capitalism. I don't want to live under any other system. I mean, the movies that I make, the goal is to make money and to get people to buy the product. But it's always this pull, right, between the two.
Yeah, good versus evil. That's what life is.
Buy this and it'll make you happy.
Download the Mallard Report. It'll make you happy. Oh, wait.
And it will. You know what, people? Temporarily. It will make you happy temporarily if you download this program.
It will. And then next week we'll have another one, so we'll make you happy again. No.
Yeah, that's right. It's not lasting happiness. Okay, coffee in the morning makes me happy. When I get up, I think about my coffee. I want my coffee. I make myself do push-ups before I get my coffee so that I will look forward to my coffee more. But then when the coffee's gone, it's like, but what's really good is the looking forward to the coffee.
It's like the kid on Christmas thing.
No Christmas. What a great analogy.
You look forward, the kid looks, I've got two young kids at home. They look forward to it, they look forward to it. And then about 1 o'clock, Christmas Day, they're still playing with the box for that one toy that was big. But other than that, everything else is kind of like collect and dust already.
And then they forget what they got, like a week later.
Yeah.
What'd you get for Christmas? I don't know. What'd Santa Claus bring you? They might be able to remember one big thing.
And it's true, though. If you're going to get your kid anything, get them a box. Just that's that's the takeaway from today's show. Get them a box. Empty box.
Yeah, the box. The box is the best. I made a time machine out of a box when I was a kid. Big refrigerator box. I'll never forget. It was the best toy I ever had. I drew knobs on it and everything. I went everywhere in that time machine before it rotted in the rain.
It's true.
It was great.
So you kind of mentioned in passing, I'll spin this conversation back into the paranormal, I guess. Your hometown of Georgia, South Carolina, being CBS said it was one of the most haunted places in America. I have never heard of it. So what makes it that? What do you know?
It's a very old town, dating from the early 1700s. It's a very tragic town. It was almost destroyed twice in the Revolutionary War and in the Civil War. It was a seat of the great pain of slavery. There were more slaves per capita in Georgetown County, South Carolina, before the Civil War, more slaves per capita in Georgetown County than anywhere else in the world. It was the capital of the slave industry, and most of them came from Ghana, West Africa, and had very strong superstitions themselves, which became mixed into our culture. It's a place that has a lot of trees that droop with time, old buildings tucked back in woods, ruins, swamps, hanging moss. The past is just in the air there. It's just in the air. And all of these ghost stories have been collected into several little volumes over the years. And most of them involve sadness. There's one that's really, really creepy. It's a haunted church called Old Gunn's Church. Gunn was the man who built the church, and he's supposed to be seen along the roof line of the church, which doesn't exist anymore, just the tower does. But you're supposed to be able to see him taking his last walk before he fell to his death in the moonlight. And I remember going out there as a kid. As soon as I could learn to drive, we all went out to Old Gunn's Church and just staring up in the moonlight. I swear you could almost see him up there. It's a place where the past is palpable. And I grew up believing that the past doesn't ever leave us, that it just hangs around waiting to be found. Does that sound weird?
No, I totally agree with it. Makes sense to me. Because we're so... It's a politically correct history anymore. You get little snippets of it, what they want you to hear. But it's all around you. I mean, I live in the oil region, where oil was found and, you know, produced in large quantities for a number of years, but when it was first, you know, in the form. But you don't hear the horror stories about all the murders and the pilgrimages and all this stuff. You just hear it was founded here. How lovely.
Mm.
And then you start, you know, as an adult, you start reading actual accounts, and it goes, Bill needs to come here and make a movie about some of this stuff. Oh.
We had a tour. I ran the Chamber of Commerce in my local town when I got out of school. And we used to have a ghost-busting tour, we called, and we had some paranormal investigators come. And they would lead people on tours of these places. And one of them told me, and I never forgot it, she said, it's like watching a film. It's a film that runs over and over and over and over and over again. You can't touch the film or alter the film. But the film runs as long as the environment remains the same. But she said that in her experience, just changing the environment radically, if it's an old house that's haunted, for instance, letting in more light or radically changing the architecture of the room can make the apparition go away forever. Because the past is tied to the place. You know?
I hear that, and I also hear people that have the stories of the ghost walking right through the wall because the house was redone, and they can still see it.
Interesting. I don't know. I never heard of a haunted parking lot. But haunted structures you hear about quite a bit.
Yeah, because people don't spend enough time investigating parking lots or too busy knocking cemeteries over in the middle of the night and stuff.
Ooh, interesting. Okay, here's something I think about. I live in a building. It was built in 1927. And this is Hollywood,
right.
So you know there's been a lot of, many, many, many people lived over here. And it just struck me, because I looked at the house where Bela Lugosi died, the apartment where he died, and it's like a half a mile from here. And I walked past it all the way to the gym, and I was like, oh, that's where Bela Lugosi died. I thought, do the people who live in there know that Bela Lugosi died in that apartment? And then I thought, wait, Billy, have people died in your apartment? Probably.
I would assume.
Since 1927?
Somebody, at least in the building. I would assume.
But if I knew that someone had died in this apartment, would it change my feeling about the apartment?
And?
I don't know. I think it would. Yes, I think then I'd want to know who the person was and how they died. And as I'm looking now, you know, this is getting kind of dark, and you know, looking out into the rest of the apartment and shadows, and I would be wondering, are they out there? And yeah, so the stories of the past definitely change. Are. Like if we knew in a parking lot, if we knew all the things that had gone on there, we'd probably be more apt to feel them and see them.
Yeah, because you got to figure that's where people are getting whacked and shoved in trunks at. They're not getting that's not happening in a house.
And people have fallen in love, and people have divorces have been hatched, and lies have been told, and good things and bad things. All this human activity swirling around.
Yeah. It's just amazing when you think about all the different people that have come through. I mean, like, go back to the gold rush even out there and all the different tales that must entail and people coming to Hollywood. I mean, Hollywood hasn't always been the glitz and glamour place that it was. I mean, there were some dark times out there, so.
Shit, it ain't glitz and glamour now. It's a pretty seedy neighborhood, actually, Hollywood is. But I like it. I talk to all the homeless people. When we hang up, I'm going to walk down to the W Hotel, which is about, you know, a mile and a half from my house, and do a red carpet down there. And on the way, I'll pass hookers. I'll pass a guy with no legs who drags himself along Hollywood Boulevard shining the stars up with Brasso. You know, I'll pass people who have a guitar and a dream. And it's just the richness of human experience out here just blows me away, Jim, because everybody's yearning or searching for something or nobody's completely satisfied. You can feel that in the air, and you think about that going on for all of these years. What do you think about human yearning all over the world? We must be a really haunted world.
I think we are. And I want to thank you for jumping on and doing this before your event. I know that we had to shuffle around, but really is cool to be talking to somebody before they jump on the red carpet. So.
Oh, please. Red carpet. It's a piece of red carpet.
I know, but it's...
You know. People say, oh, I'd love to walk the red carpet. I'm like, dude, it comes from Home Depot. It's literally, if you rent the rig, you rent the little, you know, the little bars and the little velvet ropes that go between them, and you rent the backdrop, and you get your piece of home carpet, carpet from Home Depot, and you lay it out, and you're on the red carpet.
But it's still kind of cool. It's still wild.
Yeah, it is. You know what? I'm full of bullshit, because I'm telling you, oh, it's nothing. But I'm going to iron my clothes, make sure my hair looks right, go down there with a beautiful lady, get on the red carpet and smile, and I'll be thinking, wow, I'm on the red carpet.
And you should post a picture, and I'll post it out to the listeners later.
All right, I will. And I'm glad that I realized I'm full of shit. You know what, Jim? It's good to realize you're full of shit.
It is. And speaking of getting ready to go, we've got about 3 minutes left before I got to hang up. Well, I don't have to hang up on you, but I'm going to hang up on you because of the
right. I love that.
The time
constraint.
So I'm going to post your IMDb link so people can go hit that. I don't want to say
thank
several
you.
Hundred times, but at least they should go see it and go see all the projects you've been in on. And it's amazing, but I've got to ask you one more question before we go. I've seen that you did a short film with Jim Carrey.
Yep.
I'm sure you get asked this a lot, but what was that like?
He's very nice. He's a really, really quiet, reflective, introspective man. Not at all a comedian offset. But when he gets on, when he turns it on, it really is like watching Michelangelo work. He's amazing. He knows exactly what he's doing. He knows the timing. He takes control of the set. He was great to watch. And he's so cool because he walked up on set and stuck out his hand to everybody and said, "Hey, I'm Jim." And we were like, I know. But he's given you the opportunity to say, "Hey, I'm Bill."
Because I've seen different interviews with him, and I can see that reflective and smart and intelligent guy. And then I see Dumb and Dumber, and I go, how is that the same guy?
I love Dumb and Dumber.
I know. Who doesn't?
I know, man. A lot of women. It's a guy movie. It's like the Three Stooges.
Well, but you'll have that. And I guess Dumb and Dumber 2 is coming out next summer, so we'll be able to enjoy that.
Hey, listen, thank you for having me so much. If people want to get in contact with me, I'd encourage them. You can hit my IMDb page. You can actually leave a message there, and I write back and forth to those messages. You can follow me on Twitter. I follow people back, and you know, I love to be in touch with people, so thank you.
Thank you for coming on. The door's open whenever you need a film promoted or whatever, you know where to find me, obviously. If not, I'll be back in touch at some point to get you back
Thanks,
on.
Thanks, Jim. I really enjoyed it, man.
As I promote the show, it's the fastest hour in Paranormal Talk Radio, and I tell you what, I'm glad I just looked at the clock, because if not, we'd probably be in trouble later.
Got it. Thank you so much.
So, now we've got a minute left. Now that we got all the goodbyes said, we still got a minute left. Uh-oh. That's okay.
I would just say what somebody told me in college, and this is for young people who might want to go into this business. Somebody said, do what you love and the money will follow, and I believe that. If you're passionate about something, you're going to be pretty good at it, and you'll make a living. So don't worry about what can you do to make money. Worry about what you can do that you really, really love to do, and then you'll make the world a happier place.
Very sound advice. Just take it and make it your own. Take it and make it. Have fun with it. That's the important thing. And realize that no matter how bad it gets, it could be worse. Yeah, enjoy this life, because that's all you've got, unless you're going to live 500 years.
Amen, brother.
Well, Bill, have fun at your red carpet tonight. I know. We just realized that's going to be fun. And like I said, I look forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks, Jim. God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, before we flip that on-air sign to the off position, a quick reminder. For all things about the report, previews, and reviews, go to italkparanormal.com.
This is Thomas P. Fusco, author of the book Behind the Cosmic Veil, A New Vision of Reality, and originator of the theory of supergeometry. And you are listening to The Mallard Report.
Hi, this is Dave Roundtree, author of Paranormal Technology, Understanding the Science of Ghost Hunting, lecturer, author, and paranormal researcher. And when you're not busy in the field, do what I do and listen to The Mallard Report with Jim Mallard.
If you're looking for a radio show where all things paranormal go, well, tune in. Tune in and listen every Tuesday night at 9 p.m.
That's italkparanormal.com. Good night.
Welcome to the Mallard Report. I'm your host, Jim Mallard. Before the Fast Hour and Paranormal Talk,